Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing a movie that is in theaters and now is available to rent and has also been nominated for a lot of Academy Awards. That is Promising Young Woman. Katie, I know you are very excited to talk about this one.
Yes, definitely. And what the people don't know is that you and I have been trying to record this episode on three different occasions, but there have been some audio issues. But I feel like it's been pure torture because I've wanted to talk about this movie for so long. So I'm definitely like overly excited today.
Yes, I am too. So yeah, we have tried to record this like quite a few times. So I'm glad that today we are finally, you know, recording the episode, which is great. So we don't have a ton of news for today. March Madness is still going on. It's the final four now. So we have our final four teams, Houston, Baylor, Gonzaga, and UCLA. So they'll be playing when we're recording this weekend in Indy at Lucas Oil Stadium. So I don't know who you had in your bracket. I had Gonzaga winning it all. So I'm still technically alive, but you know, other picks that I made did not go super well. So
Jared, I'm going to blame this on COVID. It is the, and not that I didn't have COVID, but it's the first year in probably 10 years I didn't do a bracket. I was just like, I don't care anymore.
Okay.
And also it wasn't that I didn't care. I just didn't feel like especially invested this year in anybody.
That's understandable
too. So I have been
too.
Watching, I do want you to know I've been watching a lot of the games though, because Arjun loves it too. So we have it on. So I think pretty much every night there's been games on. I've watched them.
Yeah, tonight when we're recording on a Wednesday, this is a rare night where there has not been a game, because I don't think there's any tonight because of the we're now on to the final four. But you're right. Like the past couple weeks, there's been games on just about every single day to watch. So
yeah. And when there's not a game on, I'll be like, oh, are there games tonight? And he's like, no. And then we watch Murder, She Wrote.
So best of both worlds there.
What's wrong
Ohio.
With me? I should be so proud, but there are times that I'm like, I should be really embarrassed that this is like the show I turn to.
So also we want to remind you to be kind to the Asian community as well. We talked about that on our last episode. We had a lot of resources and stuff on our last episode, so you can check that out if you have any questions or want to find some ways that you can help out. COVID is, you know, getting a little bit better. More people are getting their vaccine, which is great. So but you know, don't be a moron, don't do stupid stuff yet. I feel like we're very, very close to the end on this, and so if everybody just kind of, you know, keeps together and sticks it out for maybe another month or two, it seems like once we get a decent amount of people vaccinated, we might get back to normal. So, which would be great. So just keep that up. And only news item for today is that Disney did move some of their release dates and also are going to put some things on Disney Plus. So Cruella, which I know we talked about a few weeks ago, the one with Emma Stone that is coming out, that will be headed to Disney Plus. And then also Black Widow has been pushed back and will now be released on July 9th in theaters and also on Disney Plus. Now, if you have Disney Plus, it's the same thing as like Mulan. You have to pay an extra $30 to watch the movie. So that's a little bit of a bummer. And I don't think I would do that for either of those movies. Even though one is a Marvel movie, I still don't think I'd pay an extra $30.
I do think that I am going to have to pay to see Black Widow, but I have sub news because it's taken us so long to record the episode through no fault of our own. But Emma Stone, did you hear she gave birth this last week?
I did. So
yes,
congrats
she had
to
a
her.
Baby girl.
That's and very exciting.
She's being super, super private. I actually really respect it. I am such a fan, though. I'm like, no, tell me everything. And I want to be its godmother. But at the same time, I'm like, I should calm down. And she has the right to privacy. But it is very exciting. And I'm pumped for Cruella. So I was disheartened by this news because I don't want to pay $30. But I do think it's highly likely that I will be paying to watch Black Widow.
And who knows, by July 9th, I mean, that's still a while away. We may be able to go to a movie theater again in July. So, you know, if vaccination efforts keep up and, you know, things keep progressing as they are, we might be back to a sense of normalcy where we could go to the movies in July, which would be nice. So also one other thing from that announcement, the new Pixar movie, Luca, is coming out on June 18th, and that is going on Disney Plus for free, just like Soul did. So you'll be able to watch Pixar movie, the new Pixar movie, for free with no, you'll just need a Disney Plus subscription, but you won't have to pay anything extra. So that'll cost you $7.
Soul is still like the episode that I think we've gotten like more comments about than ever before. People loved that movie and were excited that we covered that film.
Yeah, and I really liked that movie. I thought that movie was
great.
Me too.
That was my favorite of 2020.
So that's all of our news for today. We do have one correction, and that is on our episode about Nomadland. We talked about Chloe Zhao, and that is, we have discovered how you pronounce her name. That is the definitive pronunciation of her name. You found something on Instagram that confirmed this, Katie.
Yes. And, you know, I re-listened to that part of the episode, and we both were like, you know, apologetic about it and not trying to be dense or disrespectful. But I do feel bad because I grew up with someone with the last name Zhao and was told to pronounce it that way. However, now I know better. So Yan Kung, and I'm sorry if I'm saying his name wrong. It could be Yan Kung. Actually, that sounds more correct. Yan Kung, he is at Kung Lab, K-U-N-G Lab. I believe this is on, it was on Instagram, but he might have put this on Twitter, but it says okay. About her being, she's the first, she got nominated for a directing Oscar, first ever non-white woman, by the way. And then he said, no one's getting her name right. Chinese ZH is like English J, and Zhao rhymes with now, but with a J. So if this helps you remember it too, he put like jowl, like a jowl when you talk about someone has jowls on their face without the L. So it's Chloe Zhao. So I appreciate him pointing that out. I appreciate Ariane Chi. I love her. I follow her on Instagram and she pointed it out. And our apologies as well. We weren't trying to be disrespectful, but that is a great opportunity for us to learn.
Exactly. So that is how you pronounce her name. So we now know that. So that's great. So corrections corner, and also like a little bit of a learning moment as well, which is
indeed.
Excellent. So now it's on to our recommends. I don't have a ton of recommends this week. I did start watching a Ted Lasso though on Apple TV Plus, which
you
I know
did?
Has been
okay.
getting a, you know, it's been getting a lot of buzz during these awards shows and things. And I really enjoy mm-hmm. it so far. I'm only 4 episodes in. It's 10 episodes long, but Jason Sudeikis is very funny in it. I like the concept of the show as a whole. If you don't know, basically this guy, he coached football in America, like, you know, football that we NFL. And then this soccer team hires him in England to go coach over there. And they're basically just doing it in hopes that he fails. But he really is like, you know, trying to be a good coach and like do things well and all that. So I really like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it really has a lot to say about like workplace culture, leadership, management, that kind of stuff. Like if I was like a new manager going into a job, I would want to watch this because of like the way he's relating to his players and stuff. It's just like a lot of good management concepts. So it's almost like a leadership show in sort of a way, but it's very funny too.
Wow.
And he's really good in it. So, and it's only, the episodes are only 30 minutes and there's only 10 episodes. I know the second season comes out later this summer on Apple TV Plus, but if you want something fun to watch that's kind of lighthearted and just like a feel good show, then check that out. So
wow, I had no idea that was the premise. I might have to watch that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, they definitely play it for laughs at times, but also like it's heartwarming too, like, and as I've watched like 4 episodes now, you can see like the progression of his character and like how people kind of like latch onto him and stuff like that. And Jason Sudeikis is great in that role. He has like a weird southern twang accent going on, and it's just like, you know, he plays that character great. So like he definitely knows like what the character's about and all of that stuff. And obviously he helps write the show and like executive produces it and stuff like that. So, but
that's awesome. Well, I might check that out. And since last week, one of the shows I've been watching too, was, these are both, you and I have talked about this one and Ted Lasso. I started watching Self-Made about Madam C.J. Walker on Netflix. That is starring Octavia Spencer. And it is about Madam C.J. Walker, who started her business, at least in Indianapolis. She did later move, but I wasn't sure how I'd feel about it because I know it came out, it's part of the Black Lives Matter collection. I know you and I had talked about it when we did our section on Black Lives Matter movies, but it is so good. And there's an infinite amount of information that I did not know about her, even knowing I learned about her growing up, especially because of the notoriety in Indianapolis. But there was so much I didn't know about her personal life. And I believe it's only 4 episodes, and I am like halfway through the 4th episode. I'll double check that it's that long. But it's been really good. I'm surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm like surprised how entertaining it is as well.
Okay. And are the episodes like, are they about an hour? Is that about how long they are?
Oh, yes. Actually, okay. Yes. Also, wait. Is it going to let me in? Because you know how Netflix, how embarrassing. You know how Netflix is doing that thing where like you can't share anymore?
Yeah. Yep.
when is that starting? Because it just gave me some kind of alert. And now I'm like, oh, no, they're coming for me.
I don't know. So,
OK, well,
who are you sharing with? Are you, you know,
my brother, of course.
And he's in Indiana and you're in Ohio. So it might get a little wonky there. It might think that
it's
you're
fine.
Trying
I can
to steal.
Totally pay for it. I can pay for it. But I do Hulu as well. And then I don't think I'll keep Disney Plus after my free year or whatever. But anyway, I'm so sorry. All of this to tell you about Self-Made. I'm almost there. But OK. It is four episodes. They are about 45 minutes each.
Okay. So pretty
easy
watch
then. But it's been
really
good. Yeah. And I plan to finish it tonight because I'm intrigued to see how this turns out. And then as far as books, I feel like I've had a lot of misses so far this year. However, I did finish 11/22/63. I was reading that a couple weeks ago. I finished it relatively quickly for how big that book is. I did watch the show on Hulu immediately after. I thought the book was 10 times better than the show. They changed a lot, which, you know, they always do with TV shows, but I wasn't super pleased with the changes they made. And then also James Franco is the lead, and I think we all know how I feel about James Franco. Gross. I wish we should do a gross alert, like a vomit sound. Anyway, but I did... True to my, one of my goals this year was to read six classics, and I read technically my second one. I read Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. I was so surprised. I had not read it yet in my life, which is kind of weird. But he is another Indiana staple. We are very proud of him in Indiana. And Slaughterhouse-Five was good. I feel like this year, unintentionally, I'm reading a ton of books about World War II. And I didn't set out to do that. But I think I've already read six books about World War II this year.
Wow.
And then I think there were two books I did want to tell you about that I loved. I read A Very Punchable Face by Colin Jost, who's on SNL. So my best friend Kylie gifted that to me for my birthday this year. And it was hilarious. I think I read it in one day. I didn't even mean to, but I didn't want to stop reading it. And he's also just charming and thoughtful. And there was a lot I didn't know about him. So made me like him even more. And then I also read Here We Go Again, My Life in Television by Betty White. She has written multiple books. Sean and Amanda, so my brother and sister-in-law gifted me this book, I don't even know how many years ago, for Christmas. And it was one of those I put on the shelf. I was so excited. And then I forgot about it. And I'm trying to read all the books that I have already that I haven't read before. It was delightful. And it was fascinating. She was one of the first producers on television. She was active and famous in radio, Jared, and also television, like in the 30s, 40s. And she's still alive today. And it was just neat. It goes up to, I think, 1995 was like when she was writing this part of it or whatever. But she's written other books as well. But if you are a Betty White fan, I highly encourage you to read it. Again, that was Here We Go Again, My Life in Television.
Very nice. So those are our recommends. So we will talk now about Promising Young Woman. This came out on December 25th of 2020 and started streaming on January 15th of 2021. We should note when we watched this, this movie was on sale. I don't know if that was a temporary thing or if it's its new permanent price, but I know I rented it for like $7 instead of $20. And I think Katie, you kind of did the exact same thing where it was like cheaper.
Yes,
so,
$7.
So yep. I'm not sure if it's still $7 or not, but if you can find it cheaper than great, but it has been having a little sale now, and that might happen more since it's nominated for Oscars and stuff too. They want people to watch it before the Oscars. So it's rated R, language throughout, drug use, sexual assault, some sexual material, and strong violence. It's an hour and 53 minutes, and then IMDb is a 7.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 90%, audience 88%. So pretty highly rated from both the critics and the audience. I think that's always good to see. Sometimes we have movies that critics really like, audience doesn't, or it'll be the other way around. But when you have a movie that's kind of consistent with critics and audience, that normally means it's pretty solid. So, and then box office wise, it's made about $5 million, $6 million domestically, and about $10 million worldwide. So if you don't know, the synopsis for this movie is a young woman traumatized by a tragic event in her past seeks out vengeance against those who crossed her path. And that young woman is played by Carey Mulligan. So
boy, does she seek vengeance.
She sure does. She seeks a lot of vengeance.
In a big way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. First up, we have for critics reviews, Sarah Hagee of Globe and Mail, who says Fennell, that's the director, Emerald Fennell, says, builds a backward fantasy that feels ultimately cathartic in a very real way, but where its opening tone comes across as far too light for the palpable gravity of its ending.
I did feel that at the beginning because I love the song Boys by Charlie XCX, but I think that was intentional. So it was cool. At first I was like, wait, what? When that poppy happy song starts. And then I was like, oh, this is almost spookier that they're starting with this song. So I loved that choice.
Also, I have seen Charlie XCX twice in concert, not because I went to see her, but because she opened for somebody else that I wanted to see. So,
oh, cool. Yeah.
Fun fact. So like one time she opened for Taylor Swift and then one time she opened for Shawn Mendes. So I've seen her twice, even though I didn't intend to. So she puts on a fun set, though. Her songs are very fun and poppy. So,
yeah.
Next up, we have Alex Abad Santos of Vox, who says, around 10 minutes into Emerald Fennell's blistering Promising Young Woman, I realized that it would be one of my favorite movies.
Well, I loved the dramatic reading of that, Jared.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I always try to do the critics' reviews very dramatic because, you know,
they're
all about the cinema and the theater and all
the
that.
The theater. So,
next up, we have Jocelyn Novacek of the Associated Press, or Novek, Okay, who said,
I think startled. Novek.
Okay, Novek. Jocelyn Novek of the Associated Press, who says, startling. The only way to describe Fennell's vision and execution in this, her directorial debut, and sensational, a word that only begins to capture Carey Mulligan's lead performance.
Yes. Yes, yes to all of that. I agree.
And then finally, we have Ty Burr of the Boston Globe, who we shared their reviews before. He says, Fennell is a fearsome sensibility and a talent to watch out for. And the arguments you may have after the lights come up will be well worth having. So, and I think we're going to have a good discussion about this movie when we get into it here in just a few minutes. So also our man, James Bardinelli, has not reviewed this one yet. So, or he wasn't in the top on Rotten Tomatoes. So,
yeah. And sometimes I skip him because I'm worried about doing the same people all the time.
I want to get him on the podcast at some point.
I know he does he does give good little quotes, little sound bites about things though. Anyway,
this episode, we're going to switch it up a little bit. Katie's going to cover the director for this one. This is directed by Emerald Fennell.
Thank you, Jared. I mainly wanted to talk about it because I felt like a moron when I was researching this. I am, first of all, irritated with myself because I didn't know Emerald Fennell sooner because she's so impressive. Also, she's English. That's not surprising. And she's the same age as Carey Mulligan, which I thought was a fun tidbit. She is currently nominated for 3 Oscars for this film. I just want to reiterate, 3 Oscars for her first film, including Best Director, Best Picture, and Best Original Screenplay. Jared, I screamed when I was researching this because she looked familiar to me and I couldn't place her. I just was like, oh, I've probably, you know, seen them talking about this on GMA or something. Anyway, she plays Camilla Parker Bowles on The Crown, and I just watched The Crown and talked about it on the show. And so I had no idea. That was all new information to me, but I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. Because, you know, you and I have seen, there's a lot of crossover often between directors and actors. Like usually they're both, or they were an actor and then decided to direct, etc. So she's also been in Call the Midwife, which my friends rave about. I just haven't seen it. So I'm kind of behind the times as far as knowing Emerald Fennell. And then she also was in The Danish Girl with Eddie Redmayne.
Very nice.
This is her first time directing a full length film.
Very cool. So congrats to Emerald. I mean, pretty good when you can direct a movie and then get nominated for an Oscar, you know, your first time out. Like that's pretty solid. So we will take a quick break here on the Silver Screen Podcast. We'll come back, talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for Promising Young Woman. Welcome back here on the Sober Screen Podcast. We are talking about Promising Young Woman, not Pieces of a Woman. That's a different movie with a different woman in it. So, you know,
but we reviewed that too.
We covered all the P, you know, titled women movies this year. So we've got
and they're all nominated.
So yeah, they're all nominated. Yeah. So and it's interesting because Pieces of a Woman and Promising Young Woman both kind of follow just one woman. So they are, I mean, that's about where the similarities end, but you know, you know, it is kind of interesting that they're both focused on that. So mainly the main star of this movie for sure is Carey Mulligan, who plays Cassie in the film.
I love Carey Mulligan. Can I get a crush alert? Carey Mulligan is my everything. She is high up on my list of women that I both admire and I am deeply attracted to. I just think she is a striking woman and her performances are equally as beautiful and impressive. We did just cover her in episode 92. That was when we reviewed The Dig. So that was just a few episodes ago. And if you are interested, by the way, in Pieces of a Woman, we did that. That was episode 89 of the podcast. Carey Mulligan, though, was nominated for a Best Actress Oscar in 2010 for her performance in An Education. I have zero doubts that she is going to win an Oscar one day, but it could be this year. Who knows? I have my thoughts. She is also known for the movies Shame, Suffragette, Drive, and the new Baz Luhrmann Great Gatsby. She is married to Marcus Mumford of Mumford & Sons, which I love to just remind people, and they have two children. And then next up, she is going to star in Maestro and another film called Fingernails.
Very nice. Also, this is a much different role from The Dig. Those two roles not be more opposite from each other. And yeah, one thing I forgot to mention that I was going to bring up because I knew we were talking about Carey Mulligan is that the theme song for Ted Lasso is done by Marcus Mumford. So that was my Ted Lasso connection for this episode. So,
Jared, yeah. I love a connection. Thank you.
So
seriously.
And this movie, yes, also stars a few other people as well.
Yes, this cast is insane. And I'm going to say it slowly because you might be like, what, they're in it? So this is also starring Laverne Cox, Bo Burnham, Max Greenfield, Molly Shannon, Allison Brie, Adam Brody, Clancy Brown, Shawshank Connection, Jennifer Coolidge, Connie Britton, and Chris Lowell.
Wow. Big cast for this movie. So
big cast and all, I think, very carefully picked for this movie.
Yeah. Yep. Some of those people do have more kind of cameo appearances or a scene that they will be in. But the first couple that you listed are definitely like the supporting cast for this movie, like Laverne Cox, Bo Burnham, Max Greenfield are definitely in a lot of this movie. So now we're going to talk about our likes and dislikes. We will tell you that it's going to be really hard to talk about this movie without spoiling it. That kind of already came up in the reviews or the critics reviews a little bit that like we're going to have a prior discussion about this. And so we can't really talk about it without talking about the movie as a whole. So if you haven't seen this yet and you don't want it spoiled, stop here, come back once you've seen the movie and listen to the rest of this. So because I don't think we can talk about this without spoiling it or talking about the ending, which we kind of want to discuss. So okay.
Absolutely. So everything at this point is a spoiler.
Yeah, so let's start with our likes. First up, Carey Mulligan is excellent in this movie. I'm not a huge Carey Mulligan fan, but I will say, and I know that shocks you because you're having an aneurysm over there. Katie has passed out and will not be doing the rest of this episode. But I don't know. Something about her, just I've never really been drawn to her much as an actress. But with that said, I thought this was her best performance that I've ever seen her in by a mile.
Oh my gosh. I do love her. You know what, though? I know that I'm also drawn to her because she's English. I love her fashion sense. I mean, there's so many different things that go into that, but she has always impressed me. However, the first thing I ever saw her in was Pride and Prejudice, the newer one with Keira Knightley. And I didn't like her character, but that's not her fault. And she was one of the younger sisters. And she was also super, I mean, I think she was 16 or 18 when she did that film, but she is fantastic. Jared, I couldn't agree with you more. This is the best thing I've ever seen her in. And I didn't put any specific facts from the movie in here, but I read many articles about this film, both about the fashion choices and also the acting and stuff, about the cast, why they chose the cast. But Carey Mulligan, this is unlike anything she's ever done before. And it seemed like that was a specific move by the casting agent, but also like, I think she was really interested. I know she was really interested in doing something like this. because she normally does period pieces, serious pieces, and she was ready to do something different.
Yeah, I think that was another thing that I was going to mention too, is that like this is just such a different role for her. And I liked that because I feel like she kind of plays the same Z type role in a lot of these movies. Like you said, period pieces, English movies. Think like The Dig was like a very, like when you heard that Carey Mulligan was going to be in The Dig, you're like, yep, makes sense. Like that's the type of role right. that like she normally takes on. But like this is just so different from any of that, which I think is one reason why I really liked it as well.
I won't dwell. Sorry, I did not mean to interrupt. I won't dwell on this, but I loved her in Gatsby as well. The Great Gatsby, because that's one of my favorite books ever. And I think many English majors say that, but it really is one of my favorite books. And I think the way F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote that character of Daisy Buchanan is like, is her. So when I saw her portray that in the film, I was like, wow. I think that was another one that really astonished me, like that performance in particular. So, but even if I put those two, my two favorites together and compare it with this one, this is still my absolute favorite.
Another like for this movie is that the soundtrack is really great. We already mentioned that, but they don't really use a lot of like score type music. It's mostly Mm-mm. pre-recorded songs that have already come out, but the ways in which they use those are very well done. Like what you mentioned, Charlie XCX, it starts with Boys, which is like a very, you know, poppy, fun song. And it has a lot of those kind of sprinkled throughout, but then the movie also has some darker moments, and in those moments it will use darker music. So like the soundtrack selection for this was very good.
Yes. And also, have you ever, I think this probably, hopefully people listening can relate, have you ever listened to a movie and the title track or like the first song comes on and you're like, oh, I love this song, and you feel like you're on the cutting edge because you know that song. Like nobody in a movie had to tell you listen to this music. Because yes. That's what happened for me. I love the song Boys. I already downloaded the song Boys. Like that was a regular listen for me. But I did immediately buy this album after the film because it's a different arrangement. This one is. And then also, other people are going to get this too, this reference, Toxic by Britney Spears. They do like an orchestral arrangement of it in this movie, and it is so good. I can't explain it. I just feel like it's really cool when we have popular music or mainstream music, and they make it into an orchestral arrangement that's good. But the music was fantastic, and I think it just stood out to me a lot because the music was perfect with whatever scene it was going with. There wasn't anything in any scene where I was like, this doesn't sound like it matches with the tone.
Yeah, like even the scene where her and Bo Burnham are in the pharmacy and Paris Hilton's Stars Are Blind is playing, which is like such a throwback song that you totally forgot about and then just remembered for this movie.
It's
like,
that's happy to...
that's like the perfect song for that situation. Like that would probably totally be playing in a pharmacy. Right. It's some obscure pop track, you know, but I had totally forgotten about that song. It was erased from my memory until it was brought back up in this movie.
I'm not surprised you knew it because you do radio, but I'm happy to say I would have never known that was Paris Hilton. Like I didn't even know that song. I was like, wow, this sounds like very 90s, early aughts. And then they were saying, oh, it's Paris Hilton. And I was like, oh yeah, that adds up.
Yeah. Paris Hilton's short-lived pop career did not last very long at all.
Bummer.
Another like for this movie, we already kind of mentioned it a little bit, but the costumes are very good. Carey Mulligan wears a lot of different outfits throughout this movie that are all very fun and colorful and bright, which is kind of ironic based on the tone and the topic of this movie, but that's done intentionally. Even the pop songs thing, that's another area where that comes up. Movie's kind of talking about a dark topic, sexual assault, you know, rape, things of that nature. Then trying to use some of these things like music and costumes and things like that to kind of give it a slightly different tone and kind of show you the, like, you know, the, not the pros and cons, but like the difference between the two. So I did really like the costumes as well. I thought they were really, really well done. But kind of everybody, I mean, Carey Mulligan's obviously is the main one, but even Bo Burnham had some cool looks. Laverne Cox had some cool looks. You know, they did a nice job with the wardrobe.
Yes. And I hate that I keep using the same word, but I felt like every choice in this movie was intentional. And I say that because there are some movies we see like Judas and the Black Messiah. Loved the movie. It's seriously a top contender for me so far this year. But I wouldn't say I went through it going, oh, that was very intentional, or oh, I can see what the director was doing with that shot or that song or that costume. This was a movie where you could tell everything was a very well thought out, well executed plan. So I thought the costume was costumes were a great reflection of that. Like the pastel nail polish is very like, she takes care of her nails, whatever, but it's a very like, that's a very feminine kind of thing to do, is have like your nails done and everything. Not trying to upset anybody that doesn't adhere to gender norms. I'm just saying that's like a very feminine thing. And then also, speaking of feminine, one of the articles I read, they were talking about every choice as far as like hair, that she had long flowing blonde hair. It was braided. She had bows in it. It was never like she just got out of bed and had bedhead. She was a beautiful, striking girl that like took pride in her appearance. And then I loved a lot of there wasn't an outfit she wore that I wouldn't wear. But I think that Carey Mulligan, especially when I think of Carey Mulligan, I think of a very chic, sophisticated European woman with like usually short hair, a pixie cut, or very sleek and a bob. And this was the complete opposite, but she's still stunning. And then the only other thing, one article I read, I think it was by Variety, there's an outfit that she wears that's like a super tight bodycon dress that she wears a really high, tight pony in the back. And she's talking to this man and leaving a bar with him. And they called that the Kardashian outfit. Like that was like so they would always be like, when they were filming, they'd be like, it's Kardashian outfit time or whatever. So I thought that was funny. But I loved the costuming choices. And as someone who just really pays a lot of attention to that and loves fashion, that was my favorite.
I was trying to see if that was the outfit they use on the poster. Doesn't look like it.
I can't think of, I'll pull up the poster and I'll look, but man. Yeah, I just thought the choices were amazing. Now, I did also think, and I read, part of what they were doing, though, too, was to make her age stand out, that she's kind of stuck in a certain age where, like, now she'd be, like, my age and, like, 32, but the way she's dressing and everything is still very college. Like, when these horrible traumatic things happen to her and her friend, she's kind of stuck there.
Yeah, like she's still living with her parents. That's another thing that they bring up throughout a lot of the movie and other stuff like that. And the fact that she has a job at that coffee shop, but it's not really assumed that that's like a full-time job or that really pays a lot of money. Like they even have conversations about that. So like that kind of stuff really makes sense when you're saying she's kind of stuck in the college, age.
Jared, you're right. The movie posters, like when they show the really high ponytail and she has like a choker necklace on and stuff, that's the Kardashian outfit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
So you're right. So good job.
Thank you. Also, one thing that we already mentioned, but this movie definitely confronts tough topics. It's relevant and timely. It is, about sexual assault and covering up sexual assault and all of that type of stuff. It's also, it seems like it doesn't reference it specifically, but it seems like kind of the case that they are kind of alluring to or, leading to in this movie is the Brock Turner case, which happened back in 2016.
That's exactly what I thought.
That was the one that came through my mind in terms of the example that they're using for this movie where that happened. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of got off scot-free and, was allowed to go on and keep living his life. But obviously there was, the girl died, a girl dies in this movie, but not in the Brock Turner. But in this movie, the girl has passed away and there's still a lot of emotional trauma that Carey Mulligan is dealing with and all of that. But I thought it was a very relevant topic, especially when you think that movies take a few years to get made and developed. So they were probably working on this by 2017, 2018. So that was even more recent at that point when they were starting this movie.
Absolutely. Really good point, Jared. And I'm glad to hear you say that because I absolutely thought the Brock Turner thing, and just, I think we always focus too on like who did it, but Chanel Miller is the survivor. And she is the one that wrote the book, Know My Name, which is one of my favorite books that I think I've ever read. But I raved about that book last year. It was one of the first books I read of the year. And I'm still thinking about it. And Brock Turner was from Ohio. Unfortunately, I don't know if he lives here now, but, I have very low opinions, but I won't openly share them. But this movie too, I definitely think this brings up good conversations people should have, like what constitutes sexual assault? When do you call someone? I also love that this movie they didn't act like the audience was dumb. They didn't openly explain everything. So that was kind of a like and a dislike for me, but mostly a Carey Mulligan's friend in the film, she's dead. We find out she's dead and we find out that she was sexually assaulted. And they never say if she completed suicide or if they never really explain what happens. It's just, or if it was an accidental death, you just know that she's dead. And you don't know like when that happened, if it happened immediately following. It sounds like there was a while where her mental health was deteriorating, but they never really go into much detail. But I think that's kind of cool that they don't. They leave it open-ended. You just see how it's affected all the people around. And they don't really, well, they do explain what happened. Like they do explain it was a gang rape. They do explain, also, I'm so sorry. We probably should have done a trigger warning, and I sincerely apologize as well. I think people know if they're watching this film that they know what it's about.
Yeah.
But you do know like what has happened, and that there's a tape of this, and this happened in college, and people witnessed it and didn't do anything. I mean, this just poses really good questions about what we report. We should report these things. We should also talk about these things. There's no shame in seeking help for this. This is a trauma just as much as witnessing a murder or anything else would be a trauma. So just great conversation topics. And I think Emerald Fennell couldn't have picked a better time to do a film like this.
Yeah. And also the similarities as well with like the fact that, you know, the guy is still alive. Obviously, he's a main part of this movie, and like he's about to get married, and that's what this all centers around. Like the penultimate scene or the cumulative, you know, part of this movie is her going to the bachelor party and like confronting him there, and you know, they deal with the situation, which we'll talk about in a minute. So you know, that is definitely, yeah, like you said, a lot of relevance to like to what's happening today. So
and he's thriving. Like that was the big point of it, is like he's a white male, of course, he got away with it. They
Good
talk
job.
About how he was a promising young man, but how the whole thing is like Carrie Mulligan was a promising young doctor, a promising young woman. So was her friend Nina, but how he got away with it because they're like, well, there wasn't really evidence, and he just seemed like such a good young man, and now he's like getting married to this beautiful woman. He seems wealthy. He has a lot of friends. He's just kind of like coasting through life, and that seems to be a very common narrative that we see. So really, that thank you for bringing that up, Jared.
So before we move into dislikes, this is a new segment on the show, but we will mention that this movie was not Rupert approved. Rupert is Katie's cat. And basically, if a movie is Rupert approved, that means he watches it. If it's not Rupert approved, that means he fell asleep during it. And then this movie, he did fall asleep during the movie.
Did.
So
it was very sad because I kept telling him how excited I was to watch this film and how I've like been waiting all year for this. And I love Carrie Mulligan. I don't even think he made it through 5 minutes, and he faced the other direction, laid in his little toy basket and fell asleep. And I was like, okay, well,
he heard that Charlie XCX song come on and said, I'm
disrespectful.
Out.
That was about the only moment he was awake for, but oh, well, thanks a lot, Rupert.
Yeah. Also, we should mention that Rupert's favorite movie probably at this point in the podcast is Soul, because he did sit there basically the entire movie. Yeah,
he did. He loved Soul. So Rupert approved. Good point.
But not this movie. This movie was not Rupert approved. He fell asleep. So,
right.
So let's move on to the dislikes now. We got to talk about the ending. So,
yep.
This is probably
huge
where.
Spoiler. This
huge
is it.
Spoiler.
This is a
this
spoiler.
Is a spoiler. So, yeah. The end of the movie, Carrie Mulligan goes to the bachelor party, confronts this guy, tells him that she has video footage, tells him what she's going to do, and that, you know, she's finally going to bring it to light and get the justice that she deserves, and all that. And he decides that he is going to kill her. You know, while at this bachelor party. So they go upstairs, all the guys downstairs thinks he's about to, you know, to get, you know, some sex before wedding, which is a weird thing that happens with the bachelor party culture anyway, but we don't have to go into that.
Shouldn't be a thing. Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, that happens. They go upstairs and he decides he's going to kill her. You know, that's a scene that takes probably 15, 20 minutes to really play out. It's definitely, you know, the big scene of the movie.
Yeah. And I don't even know that he decides he's going to do it. I think that's just what ends up.
He just like does
because
it.
She attacks.
Yeah.
Him.
Yep. And he is, while this is happening, like knows that if this comes to light, it's going to ruin so much stuff about his life, his marriage. You know, that's not going to happen. He's probably going to lose his job, all of this stuff. So all of that's coming up. But anyway,
and It's because a tape has surfaced too. Like there's now video evidence that this happened and who all was involved in everything.
Yeah. And that's kind of where like Bo Burnham, we haven't talked about him much in this episode, but that's kind of Bo Burnham's character is that he knows, you know, this character. And so they're friends and that and Carey Mulligan kind of uses him to get information and stuff, even though she acts like she wants to be in a relationship with him, which I think partially she maybe does want to be, but you know, she's also very good like at playing off her emotions and actress in acting. So anyway, so the ending happens and she dies, and I think for me I did not love that ending because the whole movie was kind of set up for her to get justice for this situation, for her to, you know, bring to tell people how important this was, that this can't go unnoticed, that this was a this, her friend died and that this needs to be dealt with and that there needs to be consequences. So that's the whole theme of the movie. And also when the first time that this happened, when her friend did die from sexual assault, the police did nothing. The university that she went to did nothing. I mean, that's the scene with Connie Britton as she goes to the, you know, the university and basically
and
confronts her. So then to have the end of the movie be a situation where she dies, but then the cops come to arrest his character and like serve justice when the whole reason she's doing this is because the cops didn't, you know, care about it when it happened is kind of like, I thought, doesn't really get the point across very well. For me, I would have liked to see her character not die. I don't know, you know, what would have been happened after that, but like I think either her character dies and we don't have that scene at the end where the cops come and arrest him, or you know, she doesn't die and then she gets the vengeance that she wants and you know, the justice that she deserves and all of that. But I just thought the ending just didn't really nail the whole, it's like this movie was so great up until that last 10 minutes and then you're like, oh okay, I don't really love how this ended.
it was a bit anticlimactic, really.
I
agree with you. It's actually good we had to wait extra time to talk about this movie because I went so back and forth on this ending. However, when I think about all the stuff she got away with, like seeking out vengeance, which I love. I loved it as a movie plot, and I loved it from a perspective of, would I do this if this happened to my best friend? And I'm like, yeah, I think I kind of would. But she does so many things that could be psychologically or damaging to someone's reputation, things that you probably wouldn't get away with. Like, there's no way people wouldn't call the cops, or even if they did, they would get in trouble. But still, like, I could see people doing that to report her, what she's doing to get back at these people. So part of me sees the justification in killing her at the end. Like, she was spiraling. She mentally, I don't think, was doing very well dealing with her friend's death. And then also like all of this trauma that happened in college. It doesn't seem like she has really thrived since this incident happened. So I don't know that I'm shocked by the ending, but I completely, completely agree with you that I wanted it to turn out differently. And I kept convincing myself. I was like, oh, she's faking it. She's faking it. She's going to stab him. Like, I kept thinking she had taken some kind of drug where she was going to like kind of stop breathing for a minute.
Yeah.
And then she would like get a knife or something under the mattress and stab him. Like, I had this whole thing playing out in my brain because that scene is long.
Yep.
But in the end, yeah, she does die. And I kind of thought it was a joke. I did love, though, that even at the end, she had these timed texts that came out and things. And ultimately, like, I just think I don't know the trajectory of her life, what it would have been after this. So I'm not furious at the ending, but it was my least favorite part. And really, it's my only true criticism of this film.
Yeah, I think it's the only, I have one other little one, but this is just my only main one, really. So, you know, but I think too, the fact that like, and even they address this at the very end of the movie too, like she really like flips the script of, you know, guy takes a girl home from the bar, gets her drunk, thinks that, you know, she's going to have sex with him and everything will be fine. And she kind of reverses that by saying, you know, oh, I wasn't drunk at all. I was faking it, basically. Like, I'm completely sober and I know everything that's been happening this whole time. Yep. So, and even at the end of the movie, when the murder happens, you know, that one of the guys that's at the bachelor party comes up and talks to that character and is like, you know, it'll be fine, man. We'll just like dispose her body. And then you see her, you see them burning it and like, yeah, nobody will
know.
Remorse.
And it's
like,
zero,
you know,
remorse.
Perfectly fine. Yeah. Like, you know, you killed her, but like you did what you had to do, bro. Like, that's just what the, you know, that was the situation. So like, that's what happened. Yeah. So I mean, so even like that is still, you know, trying to bring light of the situation and like make, you know, the conversation about the, you know, how this is not right and not okay and things like that. But just to end it with like the fact that he just gets arrested by the police again, when the police didn't do anything. And that's such a, I think if that hadn't been such a big part of the storyline, I wouldn't have mattered. It wouldn't have mattered to me so much, but the fact that they referenced mm-hmm. multiple times that like this happened, we told the police, we told the university, they did nothing. Yeah. And then to have the end be like, this is how he gets arrested. But I did like the text thing. I thought that was cool to have at the end of the movie.
I think in the end, this movie is a cautionary tale about we have a problem with predators in this country and around the world. But I know this country the best. And we also clearly have an issue with like people don't respect other people's bodies, male or female. I do think for sure there's evidence that men are often the ones that are abusing this privilege of bodies more than anybody else. But I think it's just a problem that we have in our culture. It's just like perpetuated with how we dress, how we talk about people. You ask for it, etc. Like nobody is asking to get assaulted or raped and have that trauma for the rest of their life. So I think this is to serve as a cautionary tale to see how it affects everybody surrounding it. So, and also to be like, we can't let people continue to get away with this. Like, this is bad for everybody.
Yeah. So my only other dislike, which is pretty quick, is that I found the editing in this movie slightly odd at times. There would just be like, sometimes I thought it was really good. Then other times I thought there would be weird camera cuts or the framing of the scene would be kind of odd and they'd cut to another shot and it didn't really make a ton of sense. So I think it's interesting. It is nominated for best editing at the Academy Awards. So like, obviously they found merit in it, but I just didn't love the style of editing at times. Although I did think like sometimes they use really close-up shots. That's cool. Or like forced perspective. Mm-hmm. Or things like that, like that's really neat. But like I thought, especially in the like the Allison Brie like lunch scene, I think was where I noticed it the most. There was just odd cuts in that particular scene in terms of like switching back and forth between them. So
but, I didn't notice that, but that's a good thing to point out.
So just didn't love some of the editing in this. But other than that, I think that's all of our dislikes. So we'll move on to our scores now. So last episode we didn't give scores because it was Oscar nominations. So I don't remember who gave the first score on Judas and the Black Messiah.
I kind of think I did.
Okay, so I'll go first then. So
who knows? Who cares? Go right
ahead.
This
is a debate we have every episode.
I know.
I am going to give this movie an 88 out of 100. I thought it was really solid. The ending does knock it. I mean, if the ending had been better, if I had enjoyed the ending more, this would probably be in the high 90s. But mm-hmm. I think the ending drops it down maybe about 10 points for me. So 88 for me on Promising Young Woman.
Okay. Excellent. I did go high 90s. I'm going with 95. I'm not trying to cop out or whatever, because that's exactly what I gave Judas and the Black Messiah. To me, these movies are neck and neck. I care about both these issues too, though. Like, I clearly care about social justice and Black Lives Matter and really any minority group, people of color. But I also care a lot about women's rights and these kinds of issues that are happening right now with assault and things. And also somebody had asked, I think it was my friend Micah, had asked like if you could play any role or whatever. And I said, Aaron Brockovich. This is like my new one. Like if people said, if you could star in a film, what would be your dream role? This is definitely a top contender. But I was so impressed with how well thought out this movie was, and that it's very girl power. It's very timely. And it's also like bringing us to terms, like it's presenting us with a very uncomfortable topic that really needs to be discussed.
Yeah.
Great movie. Loved it.
Those are our scores for Promising Young Woman, available to stream basically, you know, Google Play, Amazon, Prime Video, you know, all those places, YouTube, wherever you can pay for movies to stream basically. And it's in some theaters, some places too. So if you feel comfortable with going to a theater and there's one near you that is showing this, we would definitely recommend that you check it out and see it, because we both really enjoyed it. So that's this episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. You can follow us on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Also search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and find us there. And if you're listening in iTunes or Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review the show. That really helps us out. We thank you very much for those. Next up on the show, we're going to be doing another Oscar-nominated movie for Best Picture. We're going to cover all the Best Picture nominees before the Oscars, and we only have two left to do. And the next one on our list is Minari, which I am excited to watch. Promising Young Woman was your probably most anticipated movie of this Oscar cycle. I think Minari is mine, just because I think I'm really going to enjoy it. And I really like the topic that it's covering and all of that. So I think that's kind of the one that I was most anticipating to see. So I'm really excited to watch that one and talk about it on our next episode.
Me too. I'm really pumped for it, especially too because of who's in it, the topic, and also I love that it is about the Asian community. And if it's half as good as Parasite, which was the last movie we saw with the South Korean cast, I am here for it. So I can't wait to watch that with you. And people have been raving about it, so I'm really, really excited.
Yeah, me too. So that'll be our next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast. We'll be talking about Min Ah Ri.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.